is Maytag Month, and Menards is passing the savings on to you. You need reliable and energy-efficient appliances to conquer the day. Menards is your one-stop shop with appliances in stock and ready to take home today. Check out our top appliance brands, including KitchenAid, Maytag, Whirlpool, Amana, and Criterion. Save big money on Maytag appliances at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line, being joined by Bob Nightingale of USA Today. Bob writing an article a couple days ago that kind of turned some truth in back into the 2017 sign stealing scandal that we knew about in 2019. Houston caught wind of this. They absolutely love it. Bob, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees this afternoon. All the stuff that happened back in 2017, you wrote in the article on USA Today, look, are you naive to believe this wasn't going on across all of Major League Baseball? Sometimes we forget that the original story said the Astros are doing this as part of a ongoing issue across Major League Baseball. What all do you think was going on back in the day? How many teams were involved?
I've always heard about eight teams. Maybe nine, maybe ten, maybe seven, but right around eight. And the smart teams were doing the same thing, very similar. I know what they were. Distributing the signs. Obviously the Astros use trash cans. People are doing different ones. But nobody else had a whistleblower. The Astros did with Mike Fires, the Astros never would have been identified either.
Bob, do you really think that at some point there will be a time when the truth comes out on people from those teams and the other teams? Because we've seen and we've had Ryan Spader on, and he's basically said without saying, look, he came out and said what he felt was the truth, and then a day later had to walk it back because he got pressure. We've seen Eric Kratz's, we've seen Lucas Giolito, we've seen these guys that start coming out to talk about the fact that it wasn't just the Astros. But will there be a time when players that have retired and have been on some of the other teams come out and say, look, this is what we were doing, and we were doing it too?
Possibly. It's probably better if someone does it in a book or something to make money off it or something like that. They don't want to, kind of rat on friends. Look at the Bobby Thompson home run. They got the sign. That took like 30 years before that came back out. So it kind of depends on that. It's almost like, a little different, but in a sense where like Jose Altuve was not getting the signs. And so I was asked, well, why isn't Jose saying that then? He says, well, I don't want to make it look bad on my other teammates that did. And so, that sort of thing. I think it's tough for a guy to come out saying we were cheating. And so, everybody else, the 25 other guys on that team, all get painted by the same brush.
Bob Nightingale of USA Today joining us on the HRMP guest line. You put something in that article, too, that I've been saying for a few years. If baseball people, if industrial people were so upset about what happened, why did Carlos Correa break the record for the most average annual value as an infielder last year? Why did George Springer get a huge contract? Why did the Yankees bring in Carlos Beltran as an analyst? Why do they employ Marwin Gonzalez? Why was Alex Cora immediately brought back to the Red Sox? A.J. Hinch got a job right away as well. It doesn't really seem like the actions match up with the words.
No, especially when the Dodgers and Yankees say, they can never play. Those two teams hate the Astros, but yet the Dodgers say, we're gonna have some talks about Correa. I don't know where it goes, but the fact that so all those guys were saying stuff, and you're hypocrites. You welcome back open arms, like, okay, I thought you hated Correa ever been that team. Apparently you don't. So yeah, it's a everybody's changes are tuned. Depending where the guy is. I mean, it's so silly, but it's only five Astros are left, only three position players. And, let's be honest. I mean, in 2017, the last two games the Astros won were on the road. So, they played 81 road games during the regular season. So it's a good team. It's a great team. And I certainly think, the Astros should be considered the same light as the Yankees from, 96 through 01 when they had that dynasty.
Bob, I'm curious, as we get into the nuts and bolts of the actual World Series going on right now, a lot being made of the travel day staying in this World Series and the fact that, of course, Astros fans clamoring that, they're giving the Phillies an advantage because they don't have the pitching the Astros have. From your national perspective, was it a surprise to you that they kept the travel day in the World Series, and your takeaway on what happened with the rain delay the rain cancellation last night?
Yeah, it was a surprise when I first heard it because I didn't believe it. I said, "Well, you got the travel day built in for a reason." And then when it checked and said, "Oh, that's what's going to be." So I asked Mann for that question because the strange part is, particularly if you're a Phillies fan, the Eagles play at the same time against the Texans.
Yep.
And, the Eagles are undefeated. So many people are watching that game. So the choice was then, do you play at 4 in the afternoon before the Eagles game and have no travel day, or go head-to-head against them? And he said, I'm sure, Fox TV was involved. They said, let's go head-to-head against it. In that case, you don't want the guys to get in at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning and play that next day, particularly if it's World Series. I know we do it in the regular season, but it made sense just to have, the way it was set up originally, the two off days, and so nothing changes.
Who do you think gains an advantage because of the World Series being extended a day and an extra off day?
Yeah, I mean, this is where it was set up anyway, right? I mean, you still had the two off days. There's still two off days.
No, there's so three now, different. Right? Because you had Sunday, Monday, and then you're going to have Friday as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because the one you had, right. It probably helps the Phillies a little bit because now instead of having Syndergaard go 3 or 4 innings tonight, they get Ranger Suarez, who's clearly their number three starter. So allow him to do that. They can move back Zach Wheeler, whose velocity really dropped off, and they're giving him 2 extra days of rest now. And so as far as pitching-wise, it's such a big advantage the Astros have. They still have the advantage, but not nearly as much as they did.
So when you say that, Bob, how do you see the rest of the series playing out? People were losing their mind after the Astros lost Game 1, and it was their first loss in the playoffs. Now, after winning Game 2, doing it the way they did it with 3 of the first pitches being extra base hits and setting the tone, how do you see these 3 games in Philadelphia playing out and then how it leads to the rest of the series?
Well, I still think now before when it was supposed to be Verlander against Nola, that was kind of a toss-up. Now you got Verlander against Syndergaard or Gibson, advantage Verlander. He's much better in that when he pitches that second World Series start than a first World Series start in his career. And then tonight you probably say, okay, tonight may be a toss-up. Game 4, big advantage Astros again. So I still think they have a decided advantage in 2 of these 3 games here.
Bob Nightingale joining us on the HRP listener line. The Astros fans, and of course us being in Houston, we've not seen that fan base of Philadelphia this year. Rob Thompson says that it's the best that he's ever seen from start to very last pitch. They're not going anywhere. Whereas the Astros went to Yankee Stadium, and they might have been, hating the Astros at the start. They might have been loud at the start, but the Astros were able to silence them. What are the Astros getting at the with the fan base there at Citizens Bank over the next 3 days?
Well, this will be the toughest one they've faced. I mean, as far as a hostility, intensity, all that. I mean, it's always been famous for that. I mean, the whole thing going Santa Claus and things like that. I mean, it's true. Tough fans. Astros, of course, had never been here. I mean, Astros were already in Yankee Stadium a couple times before then. Obviously, the Yankees were only down 2-0 with 3-0. It's like, the fans could care less. In this case, I think they'll hear it by far the loudest they have since the whole scandal broke in the spring of 2020. What is it? I think seven cities the Astros haven't been to. This is one of them. And, it's going to be very intense. I don't know. I think it would have been a lot worse last night because it's being Halloween. They'll be drinking during the day and everything else. Not that people won't still be drinking during the day, in early evening. But the fact you take the Halloween part out of it, I don't think it'll be as bad as it was in last night.
Bob, real quick, before we let you go, I'm curious what you're hearing on James Click. We heard that the Astros, at least at some point, are going to ask Dusty Baker back. Click seems to be a little bit more up in the air. Have you heard anything lately that says one way or the other whether he'll be back?
He's coming back unless he doesn't want to. So, I mean, Dusty Baker's definitely coming back. I think Click will certainly be offered to come back. I don't know if it's a year contract or 2 years, we'll see what he decides. But, yeah, right now he's definitely coming back.
Good deal.
Bob, appreciate the time as always. Enjoyed your story. Always enjoy your coverage. Hopefully no rain in Philadelphia. The weather looks nice. Enjoy the World Series.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Beautiful weather. So, yeah, it should be no problems.
Very good. Bob Nightingale. Thanks, Bob. Joining us on the HRMP guest line. That's some new information on James Click. I want to react to that as well. Also, the fans in Philadelphia. How big is that advantage tonight for the Phillies in the next 3 days? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Brandon Cook's not at practice today. Dan Graziano, who misspelled Brandon Cook's name, says the Texans are speaking with teams about a Cooks trade, but his $18 million guaranteed next year is a major problem. As of now, Houston would have to pick up a significant chunk of that to get a deal done. Pick up the cash, especially if you get like a high draft pick. You get a third rounder, hey, spend $10 million on a third rounder.
Well, it's not my money. Yeah, you're not spending a whole lot of it these days anyway, so you might as well eat some of it up and continue to get picks that will make your team better in the long haul.
I'm looking at tweets from like DJ Bieniemy and Aaron Wilson, all the, you know, the normal talking heads that cover the Houston Texans. Apparently somebody asked Lovie Smith at his press conference just moments ago if they were going to trade Brandon Cooks, and apparently Lovie Smith did not appreciate the question and kind of got on to some of the media about asking him that question. What kind of question is that,
Lovie Smith said? That people in Houston media should be asking more often, because too frequently in this city they're afraid to ask tough questions.
I have no problem with the question being asked. I also have no problem with the answer of Lovie Smith. Like, unless you've traded Brandon Cooks, you're not going to speak about potential trades of Brandon Cooks.
Because if you don't trade him after speaking about it, you are in a lot of hot water.
He said he did have a personal day, though, and that's why he's not at practice today. So
they're definitely trying.
I think they're definitely trying. I don't know if they're going to get something done. Bob Nightingale, who just joined us, covers Major League Baseball for USA Today. If you've not read his article on the Astros a couple of days ago, to me, he just dropped a huge truth bomb on baseball that I think Blankers and I have been trying to sell this to everybody, tell this to everybody for a long time now. If you're of the belief that the Astros were the only ones stealing signs in 2017, then you are ignorant to what was going on around Major League Baseball. And Bob Nightingale basically wrote that in USA Today. Now, I think people in this city, a good majority of people in this city, understand that truth. I think a good majority of people outside of this city choose to ignore that truth. Ignore, of course, short for ignorant. Very good article. I would suggest you go find it. Go read it. He also dropped a little bit of a nugget on us that we have not heard. James Click is coming back unless he doesn't want to. We always thought it was the other way, unless Crane didn't want Click back regardless of the result.
I was curious because we hadn't heard much since we heard that Dusty was going to be back, and I think that the assumptions were starting to be made that he was going to be elsewhere because, like you said, Crane just wasn't feeling it with the relationship that they had. It is interesting that he painted that picture because then you basically get the idea of, hey, he will be in demand. There will be other teams that would love to have James Click services. And the fact that he would be the one that determined, because we know it's not the ideal situation when you're dealing with an owner that's as involved and hands-on as a guy like Crane, who has an ego, who has an attitude, who has a temper. And some guys are better suited to deal with a guy like that than others. And the fact that he hasn't picked his own manager yet.
If you could, like, if you're in Click's shoes and you have an owner who meddles a bit, I don't think that Crane meddles to the extent where he's Jerry Jones, but I don't think he doesn't meddle to the extent where he's Cal Maneiro.
Right.
I think that those are the two opposite ends of the spectrum, right? And Crane's probably close to the middle. If he's on one side of the fence, he's probably a little bit closer to Jones than he is Cal Maneiro, if we're talking about that being the start of the spectrum and the end of the spectrum. Also, the fact that you mentioned of not hiring your own manager. Like, a general manager is going to want full power to do everything in his organization in terms of hiring scouts, hiring general managers, having full authority to make any sort of transaction that he wants, and he doesn't have that with the Houston Astros. So I don't think that James Click's necessarily, he might be kicking the tires elsewhere. I don't know. But it seems like this is more Click driven than Crane driven. And that's the first time I've thought that.
I think that's the first time a lot of people have heard that. Because, like you said to start the segment or to start on this topic, most people are under the understanding and belief, including national writers, that this is going to be Crane's job to either keep him around or to let him walk. And we've said Crane's basically his history is you don't fire him, you let his contract expire, and then you go you part ways. Mm-hmm. Well, I think this is kind of turning it 180 and saying it's not up to Crane as much as it's up to Click, because right. he's going to have a demand for his services to where he possibly could even use that in negotiations with Crane going, hey, that's great. You want me back. But guess what? I already know there's two or three other teams that want me too. And it's a two-way street now. I don't have to sign my extension. My contract ends after the World Series. I can do whatever I want to do too. So if you don't kind of appease me mm-hmm. and make it worth my while to stay, I'm going to go and explore these other opportunities where I can pick my own manager. I have full autonomy over my staff and the scouts that you mentioned. I can do what I want to do without you being able to hold over my head that you are my employer.
And he'll be coveted, too. I mean, he's the general manager of the Astros. Like, there's going to be interest in the services of James Click. I'm not going to fearmonger the GM position, sensationalize it like a lot of people wanted to do with Strami last year. I thought the Astros would be just fine without Strami. I love Strami, but the Astros are going to be fine without Strami. That has been proven to be true with Miller and Murphy. Same thing with the GM spot. I like James Click. If James Click's the Astros general manager for the next decade, I think the Astros are in very good hands. I think if James Click leaves to go be the GM for the Mets, I think Jim Crane will find a very good GM that I'd be happy to have in their direction for the next decade as well.
Here's the advantage you have, Jeremy, that a lot of teams don't have when talking about situations like this. A lot of times you are at the mercy of the situation and the person that you're trying to retain because of the fact your team's not very good. When you're the Astros, you're as good as they've been, and you know that on paper they are scheduled to be good still for a very long time yeah. with the players that they have. They are going to be guys that are going to be coming to you and knocking on your door. You don't have to go and find Stearns in Milwaukee to see if he's interested, or find Sigmundsson and find out if this is the job that he would be interested in most. You're going to have plenty of guys that know that, hey, the best way for me to make a name for myself, aside from making big trades and savvy moves, is take a team and keep it winning or get it winning. Half the battle is won because this team's already scheduled on paper ready to win,
right.
I just take this job.
The three names that I think are most likely to be the GM next year are Click, Stearns, Sigmundsson. Mm-hmm. Give me any one of the three. I'd be happy with any one of the three. I wanted to ask Nightingale about the fans there in Philly, because we're hearing that it's different. Thompson, the manager for the Rob, Phillies, yep. is talking about how it's unlike any other place he's ever been. And he was a longtime assistant with New York. The Astros just beat the Yankees. They swept them. We know what the crowd was like there in the Bronx, where $250 tickets were going for $20 just ahead of first pitch in game 4. Everybody in Philadelphia thinks it's going to be different. We just got a text, 713-780-ESPN, 8875. People are acting like the Astros have not played in hostile environments all year long. Yankee Stadium is a nut house, and Seattle fans know how to bring the crazy. This series, when we broke their winning streak, or the series against Seattle when we broke their winning streak, plus their home playoff game, first one in over 20 years, they were insane. Maybe it doesn't match Red October in Philadelphia, but it can't be that far behind. Let's hear Rob Thompson talking about the advantage that the Phillies have at Citizens Bank Park, and then I want to ask you how much of an advantage that you think it is.
It's something that, truthfully, I've never experienced. I mean, it's so loud. It goes from the first pitch to the last pitch. There's so much energy that it just energizes our players and motivates them, and I think it's just a huge advantage for us.
I mean, look, the first thing that I take out of that is that's what you do as a player or a manager to make sure your fans come early, stay late, cheer loud, and be what they need you to be, which is an intangible in your favor. Because we all know that sometimes the crowds just aren't going to be what you expected and want them to be. So you're trying to kind of put it top of mind with everybody. Hey, look, if you're going to the game, you got to be there for us from first pitch to last pitch and every place in between. We've seen it happen here before. So I think that's something that you're supposed to say anyway. I mean, when you were saying that to start the discussion, I think about a team that wasn't even in the playoffs. When we went to Fenway, every time that the Astros have been to Fenway, including this year, Altuve caught hell times 10 and kept hearing it. And, you know, and all the other guys did too. They've been in plenty of raucous environments where they cross the line on a pitch-by-pitch basis in the stands. I don't know how this can be much different.
I think Philadelphia's a different beast, because the Astros, maybe it's similar to New York, but the Astros just absolutely shut them out. I don't know if Philadelphia is going to – I think if Philadelphia is down 6-0 in the sixth inning, they're still going to be nuts. I think that they're still going to be crazy. Philadelphia, like, leads every single attendance in every single sport. They draw 18,000 a night when the Sixers are mediocre, when the Flyers are mediocre. They live for moments like this. They were, like, destroying Broad Street after they won the World Series, and people were listening to the police scanners to see how nuts Philadelphia was going to go. I do believe Philadelphia is a different beast than any other city. That said, I don't think that the competitive advantage is really all that great. And like you said, the Astros have been hearing this stuff for years. Is this going to be a little bit more vocal? Maybe. Does it last a little bit longer? Probably. I don't think it influences the game, although the Phillies are undefeated at home in the playoffs this year.
I think it more so influences the people at the game. I mean, we've heard the stories about, you know, like Bob said, about, you know, throwing snowballs at Santa Claus, having a jail as part of the old veteran stadium with a judge on hand to give down quick sentences for people that were arrested. The 89, 90-year-old lady that was a fan of another team going to the game, having full cans of beer thrown at her as she made her way through the parking lot, because that's just Philly. I think you're going to see more and hear more of like how it relates to fans in the stands and Astros fans attending the game in Philadelphia, as opposed to it having a major impact on the players on the field, in particular the Astros.
713-780-ESPN. Are you worried about that fandom, the fans at Citizens Bank Ballpark? 713-780-3776. It's NFL trade deadline, about 90 minutes left to go. Another big name is on the move. We're going to talk to Howard Balzer on the other side about this big move and other moves that have been made around the NFL on a trade deadline Tuesday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, Corey's not only the owner of Fitz Roofing, he's the vice president of the Houston Roofing Association. He got that title because he has the respect of his peers and the trust that he knows what he's doing. That's what you need when you have anything done with your roof or your home repairs or a fence in your yard. You want someone you can trust that has the backing of people that basically say, this dude gets it. He knows what he's doing. That's what you get from Fitz Roofing. Check all the services that they offer by going to FITZRoofing.com. And then if you're ready or you're in need of someone to do something around your house, especially a leaky roof or a new roof on your business, commercial property, or your house, check them out and then get the phone out and call them at 832-521-3001. Because unlike other companies, if you call that number, they will do a free, no-obligation inspection where they will come to your business or your house and tell you exactly how they can help, and it will cost you absolutely nothing. Most companies charge $75 to $100 just to show up because of gas and because of the time out of their day. Fitz believes in their services and the way they do business so much that they do the no-obligation showing up at your house to check out what you've got going on for free. No obligation, no cost. That's the way it should be done. They have the best warranties in the business, use the best products in the business like CertainTeed shingles, and they have the best ratings in the business from Facebook to Home Advisor. That's why I wouldn't recommend anybody else. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. It's Fitz Roofing, making a difference one home at a time.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, let's go straight out to the HRMP listener line as we're being joined by Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter. Always joins us on the Killer Bees, and it's a trade deadline day today as well, Howard Balzer. Lots of moves have been made. We teased the latest news. Ian Rappaport's where I saw it first. Broncos are trading Bradley Chubb to the Dolphins for at least a 2023 first-round pick. What do you make of this move and some of the other big moves going on around the league, Howard?
Yeah, I think with Chubb, that one's been bandied about now for several weeks. And you really wonder when you look at a team like the Broncos that has an excellent pass rusher, and those obviously have become over the years something that you have to have on your team to be a successful defense. And if you're trying to build a future, okay, so you trade him. He's, you know, going to be needing a new contract. But that's why, isn't that why you draft guys on the first round, is hoping that they play up to that expectation and then to keep them around for the second contract? and yet they're moving on to hope that with the first round pick that they get, they can find, won't necessarily be another pass rusher, but you have to replace him. And there's never a guarantee, as we know, with first round picks. And so there's a couple other picks apparently included in the deal that Miami also, you know, sent a fourth round pick in 2024 plus running back Chase Edmonds. So, you know, that can help the Broncos offense, you know, a bit. He's a good, versatile player. And then Denver also sent a fifth round pick in 2025 to the Dolphins. But I'll tell you, Chase Edmonds, who I got to know a little bit in Arizona, he's probably not too happy. He signed with Miami this year as an unrestricted free agent, you know, like obviously liking things about the Dolphins and Miami or whatever. And now he's going from a 5-3 team to a 3-5 team. So he's probably not the happiest camper around. But obviously Chubb is the centerpiece of this. And you always wonder, you know, about a team like the Broncos that, you know, the real motivation for doing that when you have a guy that can be that is an excellent pass rusher. I was very intrigued by the deal that Minnesota made, you know, pretty quickly with, you know, losing Irv Smith for at least a couple of months with an ankle injury, and he's a tight end, and the Vikings, pretty good team, certainly good offensive players, an improving defense. They're 6-1, and they went out and got T.J. Hockenson, an excellent tight end from the Lions, and that gives them an immediate replacement for Smith, although he does have to come in obviously and learn the quarterback, learn the offense as quickly as he can and all those things. But, you know, from the Detroit standpoint, they were a team I thought would be better than they have been. They lost a bunch of close games early, and now it's, you know, really questionable what they have there. But you know, you just traded one of your better offensive players. And so very strange things I think sometimes we see in the NFL.
Detroit's going to Detroit, Howard. We've come to know that. So does our producer.
That's true.
I'm curious with the teams that haven't done anything yet, because there's been so many moves even way before today and the deadline coming up. But you look at Tampa Bay. They still need help all over the place for Brady. And in the past, they've been willing to go do it. Will they do something? Green Bay obviously needs receivers. Will they be able to do anything? Brandon Cooks is sitting here in Houston, though his contract is not conducive to a trade. We've seen teams actually pay and put money where their mouth is to get a higher draft pick to get out from under deals like this. Will Brandon Cooks go, and will some of these teams still find a way to get help in the next 90 minutes?
It still could happen, certainly. And, you know, the Buccaneers need help on the offensive line. And whether it's pretty hard to get anybody of quality at the trade deadline, because most of the time teams are very hesitant or reluctant to trade their depth. And anybody who's a backup offensive lineman, you have to say, well, how much better are they going to be than the guys you already have? And so, you know, the Buccaneers have those issues. Like you said, the Packers, I mean, the Cardinals made a trade a couple weeks ago after they lost Hollywood Brown with an injury and went and got Robbie Anderson from Carolina. But we also see that sometimes the expectations are way too high when you pick up a guy in the middle of the season and suddenly expect him to walk into a new team, especially a receiver who has to get on the same page as the quarterback, learn the offense, and figure out a way to somehow be productive as quickly as possible. And that's a hard thing to do. Anderson's played two games with the Cardinals. Now, the first one, of course, he was there for 2 days before a Thursday night game, but he actually played fewer snaps this past week against Minnesota than he did the week before, and doesn't have a reception yet. And so I'll say the same with Brandon Cooks. I've always been wondered why he's bounced around the league. I mean, it's funny because in with the Rams, they talk about, well, we don't have a deep threat. We don't have a deep threat. And that was one of the issues actually after the year they got to the Super Bowl with Jared Goff, and then we're kind of blaming Jared Goff. Oh, we're not going down the field. Well, they got rid of Brandon Cooks, and he was their downfield threat that year with the Rams. And so, you know, now he's, you know, like you said, he's with the Texans. So I that could be possible for Green Bay, but Green Bay wasn't in the hunt apparently for Anderson. They weren't in the hunt for Chase Claypool, who the Steelers traded to the Bears. And so, you know, the Packers might look at it, hey, like you said, money is an issue. Nothing will happen there unless they can figure out what to do with that money. But it's interesting that the Bears, in trading Roquan Smith and Robert Quinn, are paying a huge chunk of the remaining salaries for this season for both those players, which helped not only facilitate a trade, but also got them better draft picks. And you know, and contracts definitely influence how much a team is willing to give in a draft pick if they're going to make a deal. And so the Packers just seem very quiet. Now, that doesn't mean that couldn't change, like you said, in the next hour and a half. But, you know, a guy like Cooks, you would think at least being a deep threat, you can figure out some things to get him into the offense quickly. But, you know, what people forget a lot of times is how much of what happens on offense, especially between quarterback and receiver, is based on trust. And quarterbacks have to have that. And I certainly feel that the Packers don't have that now. Aaron Rodgers doesn't have it with his receivers. Certainly not nowhere close to what he had with Devontae Adams, where you can't wait for guys to get open in the NFL. Sometimes you can, don't get me wrong, but most of the time you're trusting guys to be where they're supposed to be on the field. That gets tougher with younger players who are just kind of learning the intricacies and learning the game. And it's certainly tough if you bring in a guy in the middle of a season.
Howard, I think that part of that is the scenario that the Texans are in as well. You kind of alluded to Brandon Cooks, but Nick Caserio, who, like, the Texans aren't very good. We all know that. They have one win on the season, and it's a struggle to figure out when they might win again. Brandon Cooks was not at practice today. Lovie Smith said that he wasn't because of personal reasons. His name has been mentioned in trade rumors. Brandon Cooks is liking things on Twitter, suggesting that he could be on the move. The problem there is the contract. The contract is not great around the league. For a rebuilding team like the Texans, does it make sense for them to do something like the Bears did, where they absorb a good chunk of Cook's contract to try to get as good a draft pick as they can?
Absolutely would make sense. Now, there's no question that would make sense. Heck, now, granted, it's a little different situation with Deshaun Watson, who they basically hung on to. Well, obviously, even before everything blew up with the off-the-field stuff, but they were going to hold on to him and pay him that, you know, what was it last year, over $10 million, close to $11 million. They were going to pay him that because they wanted to be able to trade him at some point. And so they figured they'd have a better chance of doing that in this past offseason than during the year last year. And so, yeah, there's no question that would get the Texans a better draft pick if they agree to pay that money, or if Brandon Cooks agrees, going to a better situation to say, well, okay, we can restructure, you know, we can change the deal and this and that, with a lot of it based on what he does the rest of the year. But again, that's a tough one. You're counting on yourself to make an instant, instant production, which is a challenge for any player. But, you know, that would be a decision for him if he wanted to restructure or take a pay cut, put incentives in, whatever it might be. But he could certainly be willing to do that, I would think, if it gets him to a place where he has a chance to be more successful and to be on a team that could be more successful.
Howard, before we let you go, I want to ask you about another Texans player, Laremy Tunsil. We mentioned Tampa Bay. There's teams that need offensive line help. Laremy Tunsil, is it better for the Texans to hang on to him, or would it be better for them to move on from him and get some more draft capital as well?
Well, the Buccaneers, the one position they're okay is at tackle, and their two tackles are healthy. And so for them to make a deal, unless they're going to switch positions, which I think would be a stretch at this point, I don't know if that would make sense for them. So
Bengals had trouble last night. I think there are teams that need left tackle.
Well, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. There's no question. And so that would be, you know, if you have a guy that you're trying to build around on the offensive line, that's what I felt about Chubb. You're building around a guy as a pass rusher. Why would you want to get rid of that? And that's the way I would feel about the Texans. Now, you know, Tunsil's played a bunch of years in the league. How many more does he have? But, you know, offensive linemen can last a long time in the NFL. So that's a guy that they could be looking at and say, hey, we're building this offense around him. And unless they would get a tremendous package for him, and I'm not saying they couldn't, but you want to really get a top level package, because they gave up a lot to get him in the trade that they made. And so you certainly would want to be able to get close to that, at least, if you were going to move him.
Howard, we always appreciate the time. Enjoy the final hour plus counting down to the NFL trade deadline.
All right, guys. Take care.
Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter. Always enjoy the conversations with Balzer. All right, Davis Mills under Tim Kelly. Is it greater than Davis Mills under Pep Hamilton? And what's the bigger issue? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Have the Texans regressed offensively? Are they worse offensively than they were a year ago?
I don't think so.
I do.
So last year,
well, I didn't ask you.
Last year they were the worst offense in the NFL. They were dead last in yards per game. This year, they're second. Like, they're the second worst offense in the NFL.
Well, there's progress. I win.
Is there, though? Is the quarterback better than he was a year ago?
But the
so is that progress?
Is.
Yeah, but that was a draft pick, right?
Yeah, but it's still, the offense is better this year from a running perspective than it was a year ago. They got someone they could actually hand the ball to that's maybe the best player offensively that they have.
I would agree with that. I said that in week three.
Well, yeah, but okay, that's great. I mean, kudos to you for saying it then. I'm just saying, as it relates to the question, are they better than they were a year ago? Well, the running game's better, but the quarterback play is obviously debatable. But it's the same guy. It's just, how far has he regressed? And because you had sprinkles in of Tyrod Taylor, does that count? And then wide receiver-wise, are they better or worse? Offensive line, are they better or worse?
But it's about the production, right?
Yeah,
like, production, it's about the production.
Production-wise, statistically, it's because your quarterback has regressed.
I think that they're both bad.
Like, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Is this year 31st, last year 32nd? Yeah, that's true. I think that they're both bottom of the barrel. I think that they're bottom of the barrel, offense last year, offense this year. Math might have on a math on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975 and 713-780-ESPN if you want to weigh in. Math might have the perfect description of like the whole Davis Mills, Texans offense, Pep Hamilton, Tim Kelly conversation. Mills has no protection, which I would actually disagree with that a little bit. Mm-hmm. No one to throw to and no coaching to help set him up for success. That said, he makes up for it by not being very good. That is the state of the Houston Texans offense. I think that summed up very
nicely. Except for the fact that we just got done talking about if Tunsil should be traded or not, and Tunsil at least protects him enough. He isn't the Bears or the Bengals, who are the top two in the league in getting their quarterback sacked. So therefore, their line has been, they're not the worst. And I think they're more middle of the road in terms, because offensively they're also opening up holes for the running game of Dameon Pierce that's doing what he's doing.
Yeah.
I think they're about middle of the road offensive line wise.
I've seen some numbers with how much time mm-hmm. does Davis Mills have, and they're usually grayed out to above average with the offensive line. The Davis Mills has more than the average amount of time to throw the football. Now, some of that can be by design. Some of that can just be Davis Mills wants to get rid of it quickly because he plays scared. Like, there's a lot of variables that are part of the equation. I don't think the Texans have a bad offensive line. They were dreadful against Tennessee. Laremy Tunsil's been one of the best left tackles in all of football. Titus Howard's been pretty average. Kenyon Green's actually been below average. Kenyon Green, to me, has flashed at times, and then at times has been really bad. He's been very volatile, which you expect out of a rookie. He's shown signs of being really good. Most of the time, he's been below average. I think the center and the right guard spots for this team are terrible.
Glaring holes.
Are glaring holes that mm-hmm. need to get fixed to elevate the rest of the offensive line. I don't really know where to put the blame. Like, we've never really thought much of Davis Mills. I think that Davis Mills can be a solid backup in the NFL. I think he could be a decent starting quarterback on a team that has a ton of talent around him. Like, I think he'd be fine in San Francisco. Like, I think he'd be fine if he took the spot of Jimmy Garoppolo. I still think that team would win football games. This team, he's not elevating anybody. Jimmy Garoppolo doesn't elevate anybody. Davis Mills doesn't really elevate anybody. It's hard to really gauge Pep Hamilton here, too. And I know that against Tennessee, like, Rex Burkhead throwing on first down, flea flicker, tight end screen. Like, this is the stuff you're coming up with. I understand the concern and the criticism for Pep Hamilton, but Pep Hamilton's also playing chess with a bunch of pawns.
Well, that's what I've said in the past. It's fair to criticize Pep Hamilton, but also realize that as an offensive coordinator, if you know you don't have the personnel to really open up the playbook or call the plays that you and your fan base would really like to see being called, then it's in your best interest to have safety first and play to the strengths of the roster that you have, which means you can't be as open as you'd like to be with all the different options you have for your offense. But also, I think that as we talked about as it relates to Lovie Smith and in the past, should he stay or should he go, and the people were already pointing fingers that maybe he should go, it's a situation where when you can't fire your head coach, and I believe for a lot of reasons based on what's happened in the last year and with the last coaching hire that they had, the Texans really can't fire Lovie for another year.
I think they can.
But I think that if you can't, regardless, if you can't or they feel like they can't, the one thing you can do if you can't fire the coach is you make changes with the coordinators. And I think it's very fair to say that if Davis Mills doesn't work out, they can move on from Pep Hamilton. Lovie is calling the defensive plays, and they could force him to hire a defensive coordinator that's not named his son. And then you could try and at least see what happens for another year.
Does Lovie sign up for that? We're going to strip you from play calling defensively. We still want you as the head coach, knowing that you're just basically a symbol. Does Lovie Smith...
Oh, I think the paycheck is enough that Lovie will see it through.
I could see Lovie getting fired after a year. I still find it very doubtful. Like, I would say less than 5% chance. It would need to be Cal McNair. Cal McNair hired Lovie Smith. It would have to be Cal McNair to fire Lovie Smith. Now, Cal McNair has never been bashful before firing guys. He fired Bill O'Brien straight off a few playoff appearances in a row when they got off to a lousy start. He fired David Culley after a year. Maybe it was on the recommendation of somebody else. But he's never been bashful about firing people.
Yeah, I just think... I think that Lovie's going to sign up for it because he's on the final. He's on the
well, I'm saying
last.
I'm saying Cal could fire him. Period. As head
coach,
he
could. But I just don't think for the imaging and everything. I don't think that he will.
I don't think so either.
And so I think that the easier thing to do if you can't do that is wait, especially if you get a franchise quarterback in the draft. And we've talked about this previously. Like, you want your franchise quarterback from the jump to have a guy that's going to teach you and work with you and be there for you and not be like musical chairs every offseason. Do I have a new head coach? Do I have a new coordinator? And so it would be in the best interest of the franchise if you do draft a franchise quarterback to get a guy that's going to be there for several years with that said quarterback.
King of Twitch just said, what? Big capital letters. Cal fired Bill O'Brien way too late. You're nuts. Cal didn't fire Bill O'Brien until they were, I think, 0-4 in the 2020 season. 2019, they went to the divisional round, lost at Arrowhead, where they had the huge lead. They were 10-6 that year, won the division. 2018, they were 11-5, won the division. Like, I'm not saying that I'm against. Like, I'm fine if you're firing head coaches that win divisions because you don't believe in them, you don't trust them. But after a dude won 11 games in 10 games and had some playoff, well, not necessarily a run, but got to the divisional round of the playoffs, I don't think that firing Bill O'Brien was too late.
I think that it was when you couldn't take it anymore. Because of the winning, you were able to stomach, in Cal's case, a little bit more and roll with him. I think that when you saw that it was obviously a failure at general manager and he traded in the backlash of trading at the time the best receiver in the NFL and getting basically a bowl of soup in return, and then seeing that coming off the backlash and the outcome that you didn't want, that you shouldn't have had to deal with in Kansas City, that he finally just said, I can't take it anymore. This is it should have been done previously, but it's got to be done now.
Yeah, I think. But you're not firing him after the year you won 10 games and go to the playoffs,
right,
which followed
right
a year after
season,
you won 11.
No.
I think that he gave Bill O'Brien the power to say, here, look, this is the rope. If you're going to be terrible as a GM, you're hanging yourself. I think that's what happened with Cal McNair. 713-780-ESPN, 6043. Gun to your head, you have to pick one. Tim Kelly, Pep Hamilton, which one are you taking?
I would take – I'm still going to lean Pep Hamilton because I think that with the right personnel, Pep Hamilton – would be more willing and open to opening them up the playbook. And I don't think – I think Tim Kelly is as vanilla as it gets as
See,
a play
caller. See, I disagree.
Caller.
I think Tim Kelly was far more, like, courageous and not conservative with the offense. I think Pep Hamilton's far more conservative
than Tim Kelly. I think
Pep
Hamilton
had Kelly.
Deshaun Watson that Tim Kelly had.
But
I think
you can see Tim Kelly with Davis Mills, and you can see Pep Hamilton with Davis Mills. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the last 2 years. I think that they were way more creative last year than they are this year. Unless you like Flea Flaker or tight end screens and Rex Burkhead throwing footballs.
I mean, that's saying something because of the fact
that they're both bad.
Yeah, and I think that at a certain point, you just have to get maybe a more modern offensive play caller. You can't get Kyle Shanahan, but there's plenty of guys falling off the tree that have gotten jobs that have been successful to where, you know, you guys with the right training that just haven't gotten the right opportunity could do a lot more to be more creative offensively
it
than
is
what they've been having.
Difficult. To gauge, you know, the two against each other because of how little they've had to work with. I kind of lean the same way as Jeremy. I think the offense itself has been worse this year. But it's just so empty. It's just so void of offensive talent that I have a hard time deciding one or the other.
I think they're both lousy. I think they're both really bad. I do think that there needs to be a change, at least from the OC point of view. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know if you strip Lovie Smith from play calling defensively, because I don't even think the Texans would be ready to win next year. There are some concerns I have defensively, though. Like, they're not very good. Their ability to stop the run is terrible.
You can't stop the run.
And then also on top of that, like, the dude that you drafted with the number three pick of this draft, you have a governor on him. This is something we talked about pre-draft. We talked about this pre-draft. If you're going to take a cornerback at number three, you can't have a governor on that quarterback.
And the governor out there, take his lumps.
The governor that I'm referring to is the fact that you're playing zone more than any other team in the NFL. Why are you drafting a cornerback at number three if you're going to sit back in a zone more than any other team in the NFL?
You got to take your lumps. You got to get burned. But at the same time, you learn while you get burned. And you're staying with some of the best receivers in the game. But you're learning along the way how it's played from play to play and how aggressive you can be. And you know, the hip turns and the subtle moves that these guys are going to make, the way they're going to try and play for the penalty. But your only way you learn is on-the-job training, and on-the-job training is man-to-man. It is not done through a zone where you can turn around and say, well, I didn't get the help I was expecting on the inside, and plays that we've already seen with Stingley.
Yeah, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. And Sauce looks better, too, by the way. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We know that this is not going to happen, but should the Astros have adjusted the rotation at all with the extra day off? And I also think it might tell you where the Astros are with Justin Verlander. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.